all the great events coming up throughout the year on the Negro League Centennial. We've got Ike Brooks joining us on the hotline. Ike, as always, a pleasure to have you on. How are you today?
I'm good, good. Thanks for having us, too.
Well, a lot of great programs, as we mentioned, at the Baseball Heritage Museum in 2020 as they relate to the Centennial of Negro League Baseball. Ike, let's kind of begin with an overview of those programs that will be available between now and December.
Oh, each month we're going to have a program that has a particular theme, not only to the month, but certainly to baseball and the role of those who had been excluded from the game have played in keeping the game alive. For example, this coming Saturday, the 18th, in connection with the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, we have a program that talks about those people who gave Dr. King inspiration to move on with the civil rights movement. And there we're talking about the reintegration of Major League Baseball. So we're going to highlight each of the 16 men who integrated each Major League franchise between 1947 and 1959.
Can you elaborate on that particular program? It's called Crossing the Line. You mentioned the reintegration of Major League Baseball and all that's going to be discussed at this weekend's event. I thought it was really fascinating reading up a little bit on this earlier. You detailed that the Jackie Robinsons and Larry Dobies of the world did a lot of things to inspire Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Can you elaborate on how they did that?
Just by taking the field, if you think of what those men went through, both Jackie and Larry in 1947, they were called all kinds of names. They even had people throw items at them. When they left the ball field in a visiting park, they could not stay in the same hotels as their teammates. They couldn't take the same public transportation as their teammates. They had to find cabs that were run by Negroes or colored people, as we were referred to during that time. So the things they went through had Dr. King say, I can continue this fight for civil rights to restore the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments and those things in the Constitution that guarantees everyone in this country equality.
And, of course, this coming Monday, January the 20th, on Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day, he will be celebrated at the museum. Now, there are all kinds of activities that will be available. Do you know more of the details on this event? What kinds of activities will be conducted?
Well, really going through some of the literature about Dr. King, making more tie-ins to what baseball meant to him. For example, he made a quote to Roy Campanella, and this had to be sometime during 1968, just prior to his death, that it was what Roy Campanella, Don Newcomb, Larry Doby, and Jackie Robinson did on the field. And when you think of it, those four men were the first blacks to play in a Major League All-Star game. Dr. King, at the time of that All-Star game, was 20 years old. So here he was embarking on his career in the clergy and being asked to restore civil rights between Atlanta, Georgia, and Montgomery, Alabama. And those men were a beacon of light to help him go forward. And it's not only those four, but of the close to 116 men entered Major League Baseball between 1947 and 1959, and the atrocities that they faced on a daily basis. And those weren't just atrocities from fans, they were even from their own teammates.
You had mentioned that on this Saturday's program, Crossing the Line, the reintegration of Major League Baseball, you'll discuss a number of different names. We've talked about a couple of them already, from Jackie Robinson to Larry Doby. And who are some of the other names that will be discussed in this Saturday's event?
Well, from a Cleveland standpoint, there's a guy named Orestes Minoso. You know that guy?
I do not.
Minnie Minoso?
Oh, Minnie, there we go. See, now would you say Minnie Minoso?
That's the guy. Think of it. Minnie Minoso is Cuban, or was Cuban. He was not allowed to play because of his skin color.
Wow.
Yeah, he is also the first black Latino that was signed by Major League Baseball by the Cleveland Indians.
Okay.
Numbers of people don't know that. If we go through others, there's a guy named Hank Thompson, who was signed by the St. Louis Browns, also in 1947. Hank lasted 1 month and 1 week because he didn't produce right away. The next thing you know, 2 years later, Hank is signed by the New York Giants. People in Cleveland remember, well, those who are of my age will remember Hank Thompson because he was one of the best players on the New York Giants during that 1954 World Series. Most people give credit to Willie Mays for the catch, but Hank Thompson batted over 350 during that series. Should have been the MVP.
Wow.
Yeah, no kid. Ike, you've hit on some pretty big things here, and I was just thinking about that. I mean, not only are these men responsible for crossing that border and getting into the game, but they had to be good. You mentioned they were all-stars. I mean, the amount of pressure these men had to face with people heckling them and saying things to them and then to go out and produce as well is just unbelievable.
Yeah, and if you think of another Cleveland connection, it's a guy named Sam Jethro, who played for the Cleveland Buckeyes from 1942 through 1949. Sam Jethro was the first to play for the Boston Braves. He was 33 years old as a rookie, and he was awarded the Rookie of the Year award. He led the National League in stolen bases in his rookie year and the very next year. Think of that, a 33-year-old man being a rookie, but still playing at such a high level at that time.
Again, Ike Brooks joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon this Saturday. Ike is delivering a program called Crossing the Line, the reintegration of Major League Baseball. I'm sorry, the reintegration of Major League Baseball at the Baseball Heritage Museum. It's one of many events taking place throughout the course of the calendar year at the Baseball Heritage Museum, celebrating the centennial of the Negro Leagues. And Ike, if we take a look at history here, you know, what were the Negro Leagues like back in the 1920s, in their first years of existence, and, you know, really, how did it all come together?
There's a guy named Andrew Foster. Andrew Rube Foster formed the first league, the Negro National League. He was the owner, manager of the Chicago American Giants. He formed that along with seven other franchises that were located mainly in the Midwest. They were teams from Dayton, Detroit, Chicago had two teams in that league. The one team that we all know about, the Kansas City Monarchs, St. Louis Stars, were teams that formed that first league. That was 1920. In 1923, the Eastern Colored League, and these were teams along the East Coast, Philadelphia, Baltimore, Harrisburg, Brooklyn, and in the New York area. Those two leagues played in the first Negro League World Series, which was in 1924. That pitted the Kansas City Monarchs against the Hilldale Ball Club, and Hilldale was located in a suburb just outside of Philadelphia. Is that helping any with?
Well, that's interesting, you know, how it kind of popped up in different places across the country as well. And I think, like, that kind of talks a lot about the popularity of that particular product because, you know, it may have started in the Midwest in some cases, then kind of spread to the East Coast, as you alluded to earlier. But I think more than anything else, that speaks to just how popular the Negro Leagues really became.
Yeah, and similar to Major League Baseball, the National League started – 1876, and they were Midwestern, East Coast kind of cities. And later, in 1901, came the American League. That's why the distinction between senior and junior circuit in that regard. And these leagues pattern themselves. If you think of the aspects of black baseball, and baseball in particular, or in general, you'd say at its core, it is a sport. And black baseball allowed men and women to show off their athletic abilities. We take it a step further. Negro League baseball is responsible for what we refer to as small ball today in major leagues. Think of it, when Jackie Robinson, Sam Jethroe entered the National League, speed, bunting, base running became key offensive skills. From there, you say baseball, black baseball, was a form of entertainment. You had an opportunity for folks who were in the working class to spend their time and money watching a baseball game. There was no television early on, and certainly radio was just catching on. Then you had black baseball was an industry. In fact, between 1920 to 1940s, it was the third largest industry, a black industry in this country. And it spawned a number of other businesses and entertainment venues for people.
Very interesting stuff. Again, Ike Brooks joining us this Saturday at the Baseball Heritage Museum. He's delivering a program, Crossing the Line, the reintegration of Major League Baseball. Ike, at the beginning of our conversation, we talked about how all throughout the calendar year, the Baseball Heritage Museum is celebrating the Negro League centennial. There are other programs you mentioned monthly. There are going to be specials as well. What can you tell us about some of the other programs that will be going on a little bit later on in the calendar year?
Well, during February, we're going to have a discussion on the timeline of black baseball. And that will include the formation of the various leagues, targeting on that February 13th date of the establishment of the Negro National League. And that coincides with Black History Month. During March, coincidental to Women's History Month, we're going to recognize the women who were a part of Negro League baseball, both as players and as owners. During April, as the baseball season ramps up, we'll be in about the second week of the baseball season, thanks to the early start this year. But we're going to discuss the players of color who began their major league careers with the Cleveland Indians. And that'll also cover from 1947 through 1960. And that number approaches 19 of the numbers of players of color who were a part of your Cleveland Indians. And we'll focus on a fan favorite during May, Luke Easter, who was popular both on the field and off the field, and even after his playing days were over with the Indians. In June, talk about, we all know the greatest pitcher in Negro League baseball, right? You will quickly say, all right, come on, help me out here. You're
Satchel
gonna say
Page.
The greatest pitcher was?
Satchel Paige.
Right. But there's another guy we're going to talk about who's also in the Hall of Fame, named Leon Day. He faced Satchel Paige four times during their careers, and he won three of those matchups. July, you can't go through July without talking about Cleveland's own Larry Doby. So we're going to focus on him. It'll be a week after he made his major league debut with the Indians. And in August, we're going to talk about the pageantry and the success of the East-West All-Star Games that were played between 1933 and 1955 each year, and at least one of those games was held in Chicago each of those years. In September, we're going to celebrate the 75th anniversary of the Cleveland Buckeyes World Series Championship and highlight the fact that seven players who had Negro League experience in Cleveland who made it to the major leagues. I refer to them as Cleveland's Magnificent Seven. And that program is going to be augmented by a collaboration that is occurring between the local Community Cup Classic Foundation and the Josh Gibson Foundation out of Pittsburgh. And a number of activities will occur at League Park to celebrate and commemorate the 75th anniversary of the Buckeyes World Series Championship. October, look at the roles that Cleveland baseball and the Cleveland Indians 1948 team may have had in advancing social conditions during the 40s and 50s. In November, we'll talk about those former Negro League players on that 1954 championship team. While they did not win the World Series, they still have the distinction of having the best winning percentage of any team in baseball history. And we'll end the year celebrating the life and playing career of a Northeast Ohio native and former Negro League player, Ted Tolles Jr. And it's coincidental we're going to have that celebration on what would have been Mr. Tolles' 95th birthday.
Sounds like a full year of all kinds of great programs. Again, you can catch more information at baseballheritagemuseum.org. That's baseballheritagemuseum.org. And the first of these programs to take place in 2020 goes down this Saturday from 1 to 2 at the Baseball Heritage Museum at 6601 Lexington Avenue. Ike will be giving the presentation this Saturday. Should be an outstanding one as well, Crossing the Line. Ike, as always, we appreciate you joining us. Thank you so much for stopping by, and we look forward to talking to you throughout the entire year.
My pleasure. Look forward to it. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much, Ike. Again, that's Ike Brooks joining us with the Baseball Heritage Museum.